There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the fangirl zone.
Welcome to the Mudhorn Clancast on the Fangirl Zone. I'm Steve.
I'm Beskar Dave, and today we're talking about Episode 7 of Season 1 of Andor, titled Announcement. It's written by Tony Gilroy and Stephen Schriff, and directed by Benjamin Caron.
Episode, Dave?
It was good. Yeah, I'm going to save it. I liked it.
Yes.
It's better than a bridge episode, even though they do have to tie some things together.
Right.
To lead the end of the season. So if you want to call it a bridge episode, go ahead. You know,
right.
But you know, you have to advance the plot somewhere. At least you don't skip over things. A lot of shows skip over things. You're like, oh, what happened? You go back and look and like, I never saw that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. It was nice to see the fallout of the Aldani heist. So,
yep. Empire not happy.
No, Palpatine was not a happy camper. Even though we didn't see his reaction, we saw his reaction.
Yeah. We should have showed, what was that, Colonel? He should have been tugging at his collar and watching smoke come out as he talked to the staff there.
Right.
I don't think I'd ever want to talk to the Empire. Maybe by digitally, in person? No way.
No.
So here's a quick...
Now.
Yeah, I know.
6 months become 6 years.
His face is worse than Mr. Bones on Stargirl.
Right.
And he's got a worse cackle, too. So, quick episode recap. The repercussions of the Aldani heist reach all the way to Coruscant while Cassian returns home. Oh, that's nice.
So, Seven traces the ripples of the rebel strike on Aldani across the galaxy. Every side sees the lines drawn and the action begins to build in another tension-filled hour of events that lead up to Rogue One and Star Wars. Stephen Schriff's The Americas written episode was directed by Benjamin Caron. Finds Cassian Andor hoping to make a clean break, but things are never as simple as that, especially when all sides begin to mobilize around him. There's a reason we open on Cyril and his mother, Edie, as he prepares to interview for a cubicle gib at the Bureau of Standards. His choice of a brown suit elicits heavily worded criticism from her mom, speaking of another mom with...
Angry mom.
Yeah, and it's a phrase that permeates the entire episode. Everything says something. Here she's referring to his choice of fashion, speaking to his desperation for approval. Hunter just relishes her scenes, and we live for it.
One of these days, he's going to pop.
Yeah, he will.
So a tense political warfare is maybe they all do wear underoos on that ISB. But anyway,
they should be.
They should be. A Death Star under ruse. So intense political warfare is underway at the ISB, where Colonel Yularen announces they're ready to respond forcefully, and Deidre Miro looks ready for it. I know, she's all excited in her chair there, like, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, the measures will be put in place, a tax will be imposed equal to 5 times the amount stolen from Aldani, and any sector harboring partisan activity and the use of local custom festivals or tradition as cover for rebel activity will trigger permanent revocation of imperial tolerance. I thought they would just kick you out of the Empire. Huh? Okay.
Yeah, no, please. Yeah.
Additionally, as per Emperor Palpatine, that name drop there, assurance has been made that in the wake of the Aldani robbery, the ISB will be convening an emergency Senate session and proposing legislation package of bills and amendments that will free them to do surveillance, search, and seizure whenever they deem necessary. See you later, Republic.
Yep.
They're going full fascism here with the public order resentencing directive, which stipulates any criminal act, even one with indirect effect on the Empire. You can pick anything you want then. It'll be branded a Class 1 offense, as all prison sentences will be reevaluated and all outstanding fines and levies are to be paid in full because the Empire wants to clear that they're keeping everyone in line. Deidre knows the rebels want this big reaction, thinks they're playing into their hands. Yep, but she also knows that Aldani was an announcement of their intention for a revolution. Sure was Luthen's, going to his plan. She does, however, see the newly gained access to anything she desires as her chance to prove herself. Back on Coruscant, Luthen reminds Mon Mothma that she knew where it was going. Revolutions are expensive. He reminds her when she realizes what will be set in motion. Yeah, but we haven't seen her like this. So she's like, oh.
Yeah, wait, this is yeah. What I wanted.
It's a bitter pill for her to swallow, and they need the Empire to overact to show their true face. The Rebel Network is set up, and Mon is left grappling with moving forward at the cost of pain to others. Mon assures her he's always at her service. Clay remarks that she hopes Mon is worth it. Ding, ding, ding on Clea.
Yeah.
And a quick scene with Karn is an interview describing the situation left him jobless. It's clear he's not over the injustice he's seen. Yeah, I wouldn't divulge any of that to your future boss. He's told to strike it off his record as he assimilates to his new gig. He thanks his, and he has his uncle to thank. Karn's obsession begins to fester when he's convinced his day will come. Yeah, I think it is too, and we hope it is in the form of a new Empire mommy, Deidre, saving him from the office hell that he's in. I'm looking forward to that. It'd be so good that they're bad together. Let's see it already. The more Deidre digs for missing items from Star System, the more we know this demented meetup is on the way.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like Todd and Jenny finding each other across the universe.
Speaking of doing bad, we pick up on Clea in a maroon hooded outfit, black leggings, and boots. Damn near didn't recognize her. Clear that she's on a mission, and one that that's not maybe entirely sanctioned by Luthen. She meets with Vel, no longer looking like a rebel, but in some proper Coruscant glam as a disguise.
Almost didn't recognize her. I was like, oh, no, wait a minute.
Yeah. She inquires about Senta if she's heard anything, and Clay admonishes her for putting them at risk for even receiving more messages. Uneasy, Vel asks where Luthen is, and Clay informs her he couldn't make it.
Yeah, that's what Vel should go off for Vel.
Shockingly, she asks Vel to track down Andor and kill him. There's no need for loose ends knowing about Luthen.
Yikes.
Yeah, if you watch closely, you'll notice that Vel does not give Clay the kyber Andor entrusted her with.
Yeah, she must somewhere deep inside is like, uh-oh, don't trust her.
Yeah, so we hope that their reunion does not involve her turning against him. See a moment on Aldani where Senta on the run sees the ISB arrive. We'd just like to see the Rebel crew back together, which by the end of the episode doesn't seem like it's going to be anytime soon.
Not easy.
Andor gets back home to Ferrix under the cover of night. While B2 EMO and Mava are happy, she tells him it's not safe for him there. No joke. Ferrix is now under Imperial authority, and Cassian says it doesn't matter. He's there to take them away. Mava considers it, but puts it off until morning. There's something new behind her eyes that Andor does not immediately recognize. Quiet intrigue continues to build at a high-class gathering in Mon's home, where she is dressed in a stunning white gown out of her usual prim attire.
She looks so great.
Yeah. Fashion is freer and confident as she pulls an old friend from Chandrilia, Tay Colma, into a conversation about their childhood. He's a banker and she knows what she wants, so in between smiles, they discuss their learning. Tay says he really can't share his stance in regards to the Empire because she's so connected to it. Han pushes back that even though she's seen as a humanitarian nuisance, more aware than he thinks, where she's being followed, that her driver is an ISB plant, and she wants it that way. It's clear to the Empire she has a bleeding heart for the Separatists when she fights for them and against Empire overreach in the Senate.
Did you ever see The Crown? Do you watch the episodes of The Crown?
No.
The actor that plays Tay Colma was on that. He was he portrayed, I think his name was Peter Townsend, at least Commander Townsend of the RAF, who had an affair with the princess. I think it was Princess right. Anne. Oh, boy. I didn't even put the two together. I'm like, huh. I knew his face looked familiar, but
right.
Put young man in the crown, fighter pilot stuff, and now he's like a gray-haired banker.
Right.
Yeah. So ultimately, they think she's just a political irritation, and she knows it. It's her front. As she says, she learned it from Palpatine. I show you the stone in my hand, you miss the knife at your throat. So as long as they only care to see what she does on the surface with her benevolence, they'll miss what she's really doing. Why not? Mon talking revolution is engrossing, and I do believe that if she and Tay were old flames, it could be rekindled. I know, I could help but think that's what he was thinking. He's like, what are you talking about? Her agenda is more than that, though. We do want her to find happiness outside of Perrin. Who's the worst? Yeah, there's a lot of bad parents on our current shows. Because of the chase, she's raising money and asked Tay to help her access her family accounts for her Tandrillon charitable outreach program. While Tay doesn't say much of a word in his stunned state, she asks him to be chairman and says it will involve visits to Coruscant. That's not bad, right? Come on, buddy. Things on Ferrix. Yeah. Things on Joiner on the gallows. Things on Ferrix aren't going exactly as Andor hoped, but really, what did he expect? Well, there's always hope, like a new hope. When he goes to Bix, she tells him it's the last place he should be and echoes the sentiment he's not safe to be there. Cassian tries to reminisce about their past together, but she cuts him short with the romanticism. Yeah, even that didn't work.
No.
You scam, you borrow, you lie, you disappear, she reminds him. His last disappearance resulted in ISB putting up barracks on Ferrix, and everyone blames him. He's like, they do. You know, usually when you come into a lot of money, you're pretty popular. This guy is just the opposite.
You're right.
So he points out that Tim, he got what he deserved, not said anything. They wouldn't be in this situation. That's right. And Bix clarifies, their dead boyfriend jealousy doesn't change that. But Gasson, there's always something afoot, and what he needs to go away for good. Wow, yeah, he can't break the spell, Cass. Before leaving Bix with what he owes her, he asks if she knows anything about Luthen, and she says she doesn't. You trust her? Do you believe her?
Nope.
Really? I do.
Oh, okay.
I bet she doesn't. Yeah, he's pretty paranoid these days and been closing all these doors. We'll see. On his way back home, he sees a stormtrooper presence and reminds him of a formative memory. Once in his youth, where he and his adopted father, Clem, see, that's where he got the name, witness a crowd standing against the Empire. His dad, in order to protect the community, goes over to tell him, keep the peace, but gets labeled a supporter. We don't see it happen. He gets executed on the spot as part of a crowd the troopers take aim at. It's a harrowing truth that's lived in the morning. Was that him hanging, too? Did they kill him and hang him?
Yeah.
In the morning, Marva reveals she doesn't want to leave. You notice around there's all sorts of thriving greenery, and the glint in her eyes back, and she's very happy. Andor tells her they have to leave, and she doesn't. And she said it doesn't matter. The Empire is setting up everywhere, and so she wants to stay and fight like those heroes in Aldani. He's standing right there.
Yep.
Yunusha is incredible. In the heartbreaking scene where she explains that until the act of rebellion, she avoided the square where Clem was hung, but then she felt inspired to don her best coat and smile. She finally felt free in her mind to stand up. I wonder what she thought of her son was actually the guy who pulled it off.
Right.
And then she rubs it in by saying, if there are heroes brave enough to take on the whole Imperial garrison, I'm brave enough to stick it out here. She's old and willing to do what's right, but understands why Andor continues to refuse the call. Does he?
Yeah. Everything that was taken away from you before you even started. Take all the money you found and go and find some peace. This hit really hard as a child of diaspora, revealing how the disenfranchised often move from place to place to escape the same fate until it gets to the point that it's unescapable. No peace in a world run by fascism is a dream deferred. So as Andor realizes he's going to be separated from his family again, he can't stay and she can't leave. He tells her he'll be worried about her and she says that's love. Truly one of the most emotional scenes in Star Wars. I can't even fully process that. The act of leaving behind loved ones who can't leave hits too close to home for many. Marva affirms she can't beat them if she runs away. Last request to her son is for him to stop looking for his sister. She tells him there were no survivors and to stop carrying guilt for things out of his control that happened when he was only a child.
That still mirrors what's going on in Stargirl.
Yes. Peace is hard to find when you have the burden of displaced trauma stemming from atrocities that marginalize experience that out of their control. A Star Wars lesson wasn't expected. The Empire begins to formulate more action as Major Partagaz assembles his supervisors. Levin has been on gatekeeping Deidre Miro and lodges a charge against her. Miro is overstepping by fixating on the overreach she was reprimanded for, compromising Imperial safety regarding Ferret. Deidre is in full girl boss mode and admits she used the Imperial Emergency Act in the wake of Aldani to get data. She was allowed, after all. Nero puts Partagaz's organizing principles on the spot, saying the rebels have been planning their actions around the sector's artificially constructed boundary. Partagaz counters by asking if she thinks his work has been supplanted. System change or die, Miro retorts with her teeth out, and she's got the proof thanks to her newly granted access. She says there's a focused rebel effort to acquire highly restricted Imperial military components. Her evidence is that by accessing unfiltered sector crime report, she can prove the links between the theft of their most secret equipment and its distribution to rebel groups across the galaxy. She calls out Blevins' knowledge that she has a documented file ready to go. Says he's out for self-preservation, and he spits back, what's more urgent than a renegade intelligence officer? This result of middle management backstabbing session is that Partagaz is impressed by Miro, and she gets to oversee the Morlana sector, taking it away from Blevins. After the meeting, they take a walk, and Partagaz warns her to watch her back.
That was a good encounter. It was like a chess match.
Yes, it was.
Across there, and she had every move planned out, too. So the moment that we see a Miami-esque beach on Niamos and listen to that seaside vaporwave needle drop like a commercial for a new Star Cruiser destination, we know the idyllic scene is too good to be true. I was too busy following the story, but I kept noticing all the aliens on the beach.
Yes.
They were hilarious. It's like something out of the cantina, and they gather on the beach. So a girl wakes up in bed while Andor, blessedly, is in the shower collecting some credits for the... There was a lot of tweets about this. Him in the shower with his shirt off.
Yeah.
Like, okay. She asks him not to forget the pizzazz for the green Revnog while he shirtlessly fumbles about his hide to hide his loot. He goes out in the coastal Coachella fashion and almost immediately runs into rebels on the run who gets lumped in with him like his father Clem. Can't get away.
Nope.
So the fun
grocery store's right there.
Yeah, that's right. I go, watch me go in and buy something. The fun gets cut short and the tension whiplashes you as you think he's apprehended by a KX unit, sadly not K2SO, who's choking him in the scene that's almost too hard to watch. Even in space, the brown profiling is real. In the end, Andor, under a new name, pleads he's just a tourist, but he still gets 6 years for a fine that used to be 6 months. I wouldn't be happy with 6 months either.
No.
He got away with Aldani and got time for existing, just proving that if you run, they're looking for your reasons to find you. Until then, until everyone is free, no one is.
Exactly.
Finally got on money, loses all his friends, and then gets busted.
Yeah.
For nothing.
Probably doesn't have any money, won't have any money left if and when he gets out.
He's got, I wonder if the girl will find it in the shower there. Oh, what's this black box? Woohoo! So, anyway, we got a few Easter eggs in this episode. I think episode 7 is inspired by Leia's speech in A New Hope. Episode 7 seems to be inspired by Princess Leia warning to Tarkin in the first Star Wars movie. The more you tighten your grip, Tarkin, she told him, the more star stems will slip through your fingers. The image of a clenched fist is actually evoked in the opening scenes, ensuring the audiences can note the parallel. Later in the episode, Luthen reveals the Imperial overreaction exactly what he wanted because it would force people to notice the Emperor's tyranny. Yeah, otherwise, it's another day.
Yep.
So there's a Colonel Yularen comes back. I'm going to say a new actor, I think. The ominous speech is made by Colonel Wolf Yularen, one of the most important figures in the ISB, a notable officer who fought on the front lines in the Clone Wars. Yularen became a key figure in the development of Imperial intelligence and a trusted advisor to Emperor Palpatine himself. Yularen will ultimately be assigned as a bridge officer on the first Death Star and is destined to die when Luke Skywalker destroys the Death Star by shooting down its thermal exhaust port. See, careful what you wish for, right?
Yep.
The Imperial surveillance state is essentially put on red alert in the aftermath of the Aldani heist. Palpatine understood more than anyone else that the knowledge is power, and he deliberately created a system where it was very easy to monitor the movements of both groups and individuals. Who do you think he is? Mr. Bones?
Yeah.
According to Alexander Freed's novel Victory Price, the Emperor had a massive area of Coruscant's undercity running from the Imperial Palace all the way to the Verity District some miles away, transferred into a massive data storage and processing computer, allowing him to monitor the galaxy. Good grief.
Computer.
Yeah, I guess so. On a galaxy-wide scale. For Palpatine, the computer helped him assess the state of corruption in the galaxy to the ISB. It would be would have been the Empire's greatest super weapon, facilitating their swift responses. That's weird.
Yes. Stormtroopers have been curiously absent from Andor until Episode 7, a deliberate way of emphasizing the show's theme. Now, in the wake of the Aldani heist, Imperial stormtroopers suddenly begin to crop up everywhere. They're most visible on Coruscant, but that doesn't take long for them to appear in the Morlana sector as well. The galaxy really is in a state of high alert, thanks to Cassian Andor and the Rebels.
Oh, don't worry, they can't even shoot straight.
Yeah. Episode 7 finally reveals how the Rebel Alliance cells operated so effectively, given how closely the Empire was monitoring the galaxy. ISB had divided the galaxy into sectors, with each sector watched by an assigned casework. Staff did not consult. Meeting patterns of activity across sectors were not noticed. Aren't too bright either. Rebel Alliance effectively took advantage of Star Wars galaxy map, stealing resources in one sector and using them in another. They had found a way to turn the Empire's surveillance state against itself, where nobody was looking at the bigger picture.
It shouldn't be Palpatine be a little Force-sensitive to that?
You would think.
Such a greedy bad guy, he dismisses his own thoughts.
Yeah, Mon Mothma needs to access her family finances, but she's now being far too closely watched. She recruits an old friend, Tay Colma, to help her provide funding for the Rebel Alliance. During the conversation, she reveals only three people in the galaxy know what she's doing. Luthen and his aide number among them, and it's likely the third person is Senator Bail Organa. Mon Mothma and Bail Organa have worked together since the events of Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, although both keep their secret. Mon Mothma has no idea who Bail's adopted daughter Leia really is.
Probably better that way.
That.
Yeah.
Empire framed Mon Mothma as a champion of separatists, a smart move in terms of propaganda. Separatists were blamed for the Clone Wars, so branding all opposition to the Empire as separatist movements naturally meant people feared them. Mon Mothma is seen as an irritant in that she champions separate causes, most notably developing incident on Plain of Gorman.
Hey, Mon Mothma, you better watch your back, too.
Yes.
Anyway, we got some more Easter eggs with, like, the flashback that included the clone troopers. More of Cassian Andor's backstory is revealed in Episode 7, which features a surprising Easter egg from the Clone Wars. Cassian recalls the day the Empire came to Ferrix. This appears to have been shortly after the Republic transformed into the Empire, because flashback doesn't feature Imperial stormtroopers. Instead, there are clone troopers, and the lack of reluctance in which they fire on civilians suggests their inhibitor chips have only recently been triggered. Wow, scary.
Yes.
Andor's timeline is rather odd because earlier flashbacks had shown him explored a crashed Republic ship when he was just a child, with dialogue implying that two was set during the Clone Wars. Sorry, it's possible Cassian's own memories were confused. Yeah, maybe.
Possible.
ISB mentions their activity at Ord Mantell, a mid-rim planet that serves as the capital of the Bright Jewel Oversector. The planet became known for its underworld with a major black sun cell based during the Clone Wars, and the Rogue Clone Force 99 conducted a mission there in Star Wars The Bad Batch. Great show. If you're not watching it, you should.
Yes.
This may well be an important Easter egg because one of the most famous planets in Star Wars is found in the Bright Jewel Oversector, Yavin 4, home of the Rebel Alliance in the first Star Wars movie. Naturally, the Empire ultimately clamps down on the entire sector after the destruction of the Death Star. Poor sports.
Yeah.
Shore troopers, that was cool. What were they like? Brown uniforms? They had probe droids and security drones on Nyamos. Makes you wonder why. Well, I guess since the Imperial era, I wonder how busy the Imperial presence was before the stunt. So Cassian Andor takes a vacation to resort planet Nyamos, but he undermates the brutality of the Empire's regime and is arrested for simply walking down the wrong street. The scene features an Imperial shore trooper and there are probe droids and security droids. The presence of the droids is particularly interesting because the galaxy still fear droids after the Clone Wars. Particularly disturbing the way the Empire demonstrates its supremacy and tells citizens they should fear its power. The details of Episode 7 reinforce the main arc in a very impressive way.
No doubt.
No doubt. Sowing fear. So, up for a little ratings for this, Steve?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, let's hear it.
All right, I gave it 3.5 out of 5 jailed tourists.
I actually got it one notch higher. I gave 4 out of 5 high brown collars.
Yes.
Just to show off.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com.
Please review and rate us on iTunes and the other platform you use for your podcasts. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans of the show find us, as there are plenty of other Star Wars podcasts out there. I'm sure there's some Trek ones out there someplace. Tell your friends that I hope you are enjoying our podcast, and don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts, and may the Force be with you. Live long and prosper.
Which you can check out over at www.fangirlzone.com. We have all our podcasts up there on the page that you can browse through and test and see if you enjoy. A lot of classic shows there, that's for sure.
Might find a Star Trek one there.
Yep, called The Captain's Chair. And Marvel ones as well. So we cover the big three. And if you need to get a hold of us, click the contact tab on the homepage, and you'll find all the various ways to get a hold of us via social media, be it the Twitterverse or on Facebook. So, for this episode of the Mudhorn Clancast, I'm Steve. I show you the stone in my hand. You miss the knife at your throat.
And this is Beskar Dave, and I'm no longer following Kleya on TikTok. It's over.